Welcome to the Toncast for the week of March 1st. I'm your host, Jesse Birch, and my guest tonight is Todd Anderson.
Hi.
Todd, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
At the Toncast. It's really, I'm very excited to have you.
Yeah, I'm excited to be here. This is a great honor.
And a unique opportunity.
I would say so.
That's my understanding.
I say so. I'm going to get the Toncast bump, I guess,
now,
with the career.
In the interest of full disclosure, I should just mention that we know each other.
That's true.
We're both actors.
Mm-hmm.
We both we work a lot commercially and otherwise.
Yeah.
Would you say mostly commercially?
I would say yes. I work mostly commercially when it comes to getting paid. Yeah.
I have your Internet Movie Database.
Oh.
Page printed out here before me.
How's that?
And your primary headshot. You look really sad.
What is the primary?
It's this one.
Yeah, it doesn't print well off the internet. It's not so sad
in real life.
If you see the actual photograph, it's
how would you describe the actual photograph?
It's kind of a, you know, hey, what the fuck did you expect?
Oh, like more
kind
weary
of face.
Like,
yeah, it's not my main headshot, but I like to put it on the internet.
I like it because it reminds. I mean, I think you and I go in for a lot of similar stuff, and you know, we're obviously people seem to think we're the same type.
But, well, I guess we are in the
but
grand
you're a ginger.
Scheme. I am a ginger, but there aren't an immense amount of gingers out there.
Yeah, I know.
So they lump me into other, and sometimes they color my hair brown when they
do. They really?
Yes,
for reals.
For real, several times my hair has been colored brown, and I've on a number of commercials I've had been caked with makeup to make me look less fair.
Less fair?
Yeah.
Is that humiliating?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I remember when I did a job for Nike, the customer started to try to shove socks up my sleeves to make me look a little more bulky. So I know about humiliation.
That's terrible.
I was not happy.
Yeah, that's terrible. Sorry about that.
That's okay.
It's nice, though, that someone thinks your performance is so good that they're willing to manipulate your looks. Because usually it's just the other way. If your look is not right, but they liked your performance so much, they were willing to jam
to
stuff
manipulate
into
and to dye
your clothes
hair and make you look less pasty.
Exactly.
But I think that, you know, I always describe myself as sort of a loser type. But I don't think you look like a loser here. You just look sad.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
And the other pictures, you're smiling.
Yeah, a lot of the photographs I smile in. Yeah,
I don't.
You don't like to smile?
No, I don't. It makes me look like I've been kicked in the face. if you come to an audition, this is a half serious question.
Half serious? Oh, okay, I'll give you a half serious answer.
When you come to an audition and you see that I'm there, or that you see that I've signed in, are you really like angry and frustrated, or are you relieved?
You know, to be perfectly honest, I don't think I experience either one of those.
Really?
Yeah.
You don't experience a sense of like, shit, now I'm not going to get this.
You know, okay.
Or is it more of like, oh, thank God he's going in before me because now I have an opportunity to really show them how good I really am.
You know, I'll be perfectly honest. I'm gonna go Marc Maron with this answer and be perfectly honest. Because I see you at auditions all the time, but I used to see you at auditions before I knew you. And we wound up like actually talking more once we realized we had a mutual friend who not, you know,
an actor, which was weird.
That is weird. And we were always polite, but you were kind of intimidating.
Yeah, that's ridiculous.
Because you sit. And it's not, you know, because I have no idea how good or bad anybody is when I'm sitting in the waiting room.
Yeah.
But you look very serious when you're in a waiting room.
Oh, that's just because I'm depressive. I'm not very serious.
You're not serious, but you're just depressed to be in a waiting room. Yeah. But I have, you know, it's funny, I realize in retrospect, because a lot of people have told me I'm that way in a waiting room.
I always felt intimidated by your presence.
Why?
Because you work more than I do.
I don't know.
My feeling is based in
the idea that I work more than you. I don't know, but you might be surprised.
Hey man, I have your IMDb page right here in front of me, and
it's an immensely short list of you work theatrical more than
I
do. Credits.
I don't know. That's a great transition because I wanted to talk to you about one of your theatrical credits. In
okay.
This is a film from 2002.
2002.
Yeah, it was a while ago. So it's almost 10 years ago.
10 years.
But you were right in the middle of your career, pretty much.
You mean in 2002?
Yeah, I mean...
So at that point, 2002,
no, I guess
I've been working
for
about 7 years, so okay. My career is already over by that.
No, I guess it wouldn't be the middle. Maybe towards the beginning of your career.
I hope.
Okay, but it's a big part. You did a film called Replicate.
Yes.
That's
yes.
Kate, Replicate, K with a K.
Yes, Replicate.
And this starred Ally Landry, mm-hmm. who's the Doritos girl
mm-hmm.
from the, I think it was the Pitka spot from a couple of...
Was that Pitka?
I think it was. I don't know.
Joe
I think Pitka. It was.
It was a Joe Pitka spot.
I believe
okay.
it was. You played the character Felix.
I did.
My understanding is this was an assistant.
Like, yeah, like I, a was,
scientific,
I was.
A lab assistant.
Yeah, I was a lab assistant. And Eugene Levy was the head of the lab. It was a college uh-huh. science lab. Yeah.
Can I read the description of the film?
Oh, I wish you would.
Because I think it sounds good. It's going to take me a second.
All right.
A teenage scientist / lab technician named Max Fleming has just met the woman of his dreams, beautiful, smart, and sexy magazine reporter Kate Carson, who's trying to gain some scientific information from Max for an article that she's working on about the lab where Max works. Unfortunately, a science geek like Max isn't Kate's type. And I just want to point out before I finish that description that Max is played by James Rodet. No, on Psych.
Yeah.
And he's every bit the leading man.
Yeah.
I guess they had to geek him up for that. Or maybe not. He's slightly cross-eyed. Let's be fair. He has a slight cross-eyed.
He's a little dorky. I mean, even on Psych, he's like you know, like the cool, you know, doable dork, I would say.
Yeah.
I mean, he's you know, geeky and...
I think of myself as a doable dork. I think of him as way more, like, attractive than me.
I'm sensing, you have a bit of a...
Low self-esteem.
That's
true. Let me keep reading.
I'm not sure. Okay.
I'm going to keep reading. One day during an experiment, Max accidentally clones Kate. With the help of his buddy, Henry, Max takes advantage of the situation and transforms his replicate. See, that's what they... I see what they
it's
did
It's a play on word, yeah.
Into a more mature and masculine-centered type of person. A mm-hmm. perfect mate. But when Max's maniacal boss, Dr. Jonas... Eugene Levy,
yeah.
Has the real Kate return to finish her story on the genetic lab, Max is thrilled.
Mm.
Soon, Max realizes that the real Kate represents true perfection. This is pod gold, podcast gold, right?
Yeah, no, you should keep reading.
And love rather than the over-the-top replicate. Soon, the real Kate begins to fall for Max, too, until she discovers Max's little secret. Can I ask a question about this movie?
Yeah, please, ask away.
Does he end up with a clone and the real one?
Yes, the spoiler alert.
Yeah, please.
Real replicate winds up with the real Kate, I should say, winds up with Max, James Rodet's character,
yeah.
at the end. And they, despite the, you know, she forgives him for cloning her ultimately,
yeah.
which is...
It's nice of her.
I guess that's true love, if you can forgive
really
that.
Really
so they're together and they're happy, and the replicate remains alive. She's, you know, a guy. She's essentially a guy with lady parts. She dates Max's buddy. I can't remember the character.
Desmond Askew.
Desmond Askew's character. So he winds up, and it's his idea to make her, you know, a guy's woman sort of thing. So he winds up with her, and it's she's very aggressive, and he's very tired.
You've got Fitz Billing in this.
The joke. Yeah, I do. It was very exciting. It was a very exciting time.
This thing, this film had an estimated budget of $4
million. $4 million.
Yeah.
Huge budget.
It grossed in Spain $1.3 million.
Yeah.
And that's in dollars, but it might be in... I don't know what that is in pesos.
Well, it's picked up a lot of traction over the last 10 years. I'm pretty sure they've almost made their money back at this point.
Yeah.
I can't, you know, I'm not really sure about the numbers. It was a fun show because it was the American Pie guys. And when I got cast, they asked me to read at a table read for free.
Wow, yeah.
And I went in and did that because... I also have no self-esteem.
And no, but you have to do that.
Willing to take chances. So I went in and they liked me enough in the part that they gave me the part. And it was very underwritten, so there was a lot of improvisation happening with my scenes. And, that was kind of fun. The whole time I had mononucleosis, the Epstein-Barr, the acute form of the Epstein-Barr virus. So I was very sick. And I was getting married.
Did you have you rated the film? Because it only got a 5.6
out of 10.
Yeah, have you gone on to rate it?
I don't know that I've rated the film.
Because you could get that up a little bit.
I should probably go in. And
did you want? Had you been looking to work with Frank Longo, the director?
No, I did not know Frank until that, and that was his first feature. Yeah,
he'd done some documentaries before.
Yeah,
but primarily short he was films, an editor.
So. Yeah. Yeah,
and Stuart Gibbs wrote the Billy Blanks movie.
Billy Blanks movie,
the Tybo guy.
Oh, right. I don't. Yeah, I didn't see that.
He wrote that in addition to this movie.
I did not. I did not know those guys until I was hired. But I did enjoy working them. But Frank was a lot of fun.
Did you have an assistant?
They did not provide me with an assistant.
Desmond Askew had an assistant.
Yes, he did. But
his name was Enrico Dirty Sanchez.
Oh, right. Yeah, that wasn't real. But he asked them to put that in the credits as a gag.
That wasn't very funny. But
it seemed funny on the set, I believe.
I found it very distasteful.
You don't like Dirty Sanchez jokes? I was actually, when I lived on the West Side, this is an interesting story. They were shooting some Ben Stiller movie, and a bar that we frequented was dressed up for the movie. And we thought it had switched ownership, and the name of the bar in the movie was the Dirty Sanchez. And it had a Mexican woman on a giant billboard with like a brown mustache.
Poopy mustache.
And we thought that was an odd choice. But we went in anyway to find out that it was not real.
Do you know... This is the hard part of the interview.
Okay.
Do you know Neil Welch?
Neil Welch? No. Yeah. Is he involved? Was he involved in Replicate on some level?
Well, he's from the United Kingdom.
The UK. Yeah. Okay.
I read all the comments about this movie.
So he's a film critic of sorts.
He really did his homework.
Did he really? I'm curious about this.
And spent a lot of time, and I think spends a lot of time.
Mm-hmm.
And Neil, I just want to give you a big shout out because you spent a lot of time reviewing this film. Clearly, you watched it very carefully.
Okay, let's hear this thing.
But I wanted to give you an opportunity to respond.
All right.
To what I think are very hurtful comments.
Oh boy.
I don't have to read this.
No, please. I'm ready.
But I want to give you an opportunity to respond.
I think enough time has passed
to Mr. Welch.
Yeah.
And I have to admit I didn't note when he wrote this, but I assume it was shortly after viewing the film because it seemed very fresh in his mind.
I would imagine so. Yeah. It's a sort of a reactionary review.
I felt that it was, but he did it in points. So it was like like 10 reasons why, you know, you shouldn't see this movie. Or whatever.
10 reasons.
Yeah. But we've all got these. I mean, I have quite a few. If this interview is being conducted by you,
mm-hmm.
you could probably find five or six films that I've been involved in. Some of which I don't even put on my IMDb page.
I don't put anything on my IMDb page.
So they put it on there for you.
Yeah.
I don't know if I should read this. I don't know.
No, go. Let's hear it.
Todd R. Anderson's irritating lab assistant is irritating. But not funny. I just wanted to... I wanted to point that out because there are like... There are 20 comments on the Replicate page, and his is one of the last ones. And I feel like you really ought to get on there.
I should respond to him on the Replicate page.
I think so.
Well, I mean, it's his subjective opinion about my performance.
But then listen to what Roger Ramjet said.
Ramjet?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, very sexy and very funny. Allie Landry is terrific. I only wish I could find a girl like Replicate in real life. What a blast life would be with her.
Mm. Well...
It made a good impression on most of the viewers.
Yeah, yeah.
I just find that Neil Welch... That was out of order. That was out of order.
In one way, I'm very flattered because most people don't notice my performance in that movie. So it's nice that I stuck out enough at least to irritate somebody.
I would imagine that you weren't irritating at all. I'm sure that it was fine.
But the character, I can see having that reaction. I'm a very convincing actor, so, you know, and my guy was a bad guy and was an irritating kiss ass. So,
well, then you did your job.
You know, maybe, you know, the humor just, maybe it's, the humor's just not translating to the United Kingdom.
It may not be. That, you know what? We're two countries separated by a common language.
That's true. That's absolutely true.
And you may be right, Governor. Was that like the best job that you ever had? Was that one of your best jobs? Replicate.
It was definitely fun to do it. I was not pleased with the outcome.
What would you say your worst?
My worst.
Have you already been asked these questions by other people?
No, actually, these are very pointed questions about my past work. Most people are not comfortable enough to talk to me about these things, you know, because
I've been there.
My career's not really worked out.
Neither is mine.
No, I mean, I think the worst stuff I've ever done is luckily has not been recorded.
Really?
Yeah, I didn't have a lot of power over most of the stuff that I did. I would say the worst thing I was ever in, and I don't, you know,
You can't name names.
All right, I'm not going to name names.
Because this is being recorded.
Yeah, the worst thing that I ever did was a sitcom. And it's not that the sitcom itself was bad, but the part that they wrote for me was written for a Chinese person.
Oh.
And I'm not sure why they chose to shift races at the last minute, but they did, and it never... You know, they never really quite rewrote it enough to have it make sense.
Was your last name, like, Wong? Or
originally, yeah. When I auditioned...
Did it stay that way?
No. Okay. Well, it did for several days really until awkward. A couple days before we shot. But
yeah.
I auditioned with sides that were written in broken English. And they told me, you know, just...
Just pretend like they're not.
Just don't break the English.
Wow. That's not... Somebody wrote that you remind them of Tom Hanks.
Oh, yeah.
That's actually one of the discussions.
Really?
In the message boards. Jay Barrington.
I'd be interested if that...
Reminds me of Tom Hanks.
I'd be interested if that Neil fella likes Tom Hanks or not. But that was his name, right? The guy actually, who thought it was annoying.
Yeah, Neil... Wait, let me get his name up there again. Neil Welch.
Neil Welch.
Of the United Kingdom.
Well, Neil Welch, maybe, I would be curious if he likes Tom Hanks. You know, maybe he loves Tom Hanks so much that anything that reminds him of Tom Hanks feels like a pale comparison.
You sound a little bit like Tom Hanks, to be honest.
I get that all the time.
It's pretty amazing.
I think I owe much of my commercial career to that very
thing. I share voiceover agents with Tom Hanks' brother, Jim.
Yeah.
And Jim sounds so much like him that he does voice matches for him all the time.
That's does really, he have to audition really for the voice matches? Or
no.
They just
give
him.
They give him Woody, you know, from Toy Story for the games and stuff like
that. Oh, I see.
And he looks exactly like him, too. Best job ever? Todd Anderson?
My best job ever.
Other than being a father and a husband.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a great job.
That was a terrible
pays joke. Poorly. Pays poorly.
Yeah.
Best job ever. You mean that I actually got paid for or something that was...
doesn't have to be for pay.
I used to do a stage show, a late night comedy stage show called the Film Pigs, and we did staged parodies of,
right,
of movies. And that was definitely one of my favorites, if not my favorite.
Don't do it anymore?
No, we haven't done it in forever because we all got old. It was just a lot of work. Mm. I mean, we would sell out the shows, but we would only do two shows per, you know, thing we worked up. And so it was a lot of work, and, you know, it felt like without getting paid, and it was exhausting. Mm-hmm. And I felt like we got it to a point where it was pretty much pitch perfect. And then we tried to sell it to a bunch of places, and they thought about it, and then everybody said no. So without – I don't know. It's weird.
That's the story.
Yeah, I didn't want to keep doing the same thing over and over again just for the sake of doing it. I wanted to get paid.
I don't know what that is. there's the eating.
Yeah.
If I wasn't an actor, I probably would want to be a race car driver.
Mm-hmm.
Is there anything that you would rather do? I bet you think about that all the time.
Yeah. I know I do.
I've actually not going well.
Well, I mean, if I could, you know, afford to pay my mortgage and, you know, have my kid taken care of and go back to school to learn a new skill.
Yeah.
I mean, I probably would.
But in what?
I don't know. I'd probably go into renewable energy of some kind.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, to do something where I can earn money and actually benefit humanity. Mm. Yeah. But currently, because that's not available to me, I sometimes actually – and I used to work retail, and I hated it so very much. And now I'm sort of fantasizing about just getting a 40-hour – week job at Target or something.
I liked retail, kind of. I think it's just because I don't mind serving people. I tend to be. I prefer to be told what to do, I suppose.
Yeah, I guess to a degree that's cool. I just it pays so poorly. I think that's why I got aggravated.
It's a terrible. It's amazing.
It was too much servitude for too little money.
Have you ever walked off a job? Just any acting job. Have you ever just said, fuck this crap, and walked or been close?
I've never been on a set and then actually walked off. No. I've thought about it.
Me neither.
I came close, but I didn't.
Yeah.
And it's because I have no spine.
I don't either. But man, I do later.
And also, I didn't want to lose my agency over a day of unpleasant work.
You were a recurring character on The Guardian.
Oh, yes, the Simon Baker program.
I worked on The Mentalist.
How was working on The Mentalist?
You you did. You've recently completed Fuzz Track City.
Yeah, Fuzz Track City recently. Yeah,
where you play Murphy Dunn.
Yes.
You want to tell me a little bit about that project?
Yeah, it's a shoestring budget film that my good collegiate buddy, we've been friends, he lives out here, and he wanted to make a shoestringer, and we did. We finished principal photography in 2008. Mm-hmm. And he's currently, he's finally picture locked, and, he's scoring it and acquiring music for it. So, that's it's a 4-year, maybe five post-production.
How was Allie Landry to work with?
The Doritos girl?
Yeah, I'm returning now to Replicate.
Yeah, you've bounced back to Replicate. Allie Landry.
That felt like the material during that portion of this podcast was the punchiest.
The punchiest?
Yeah, the strongest. I had just a couple more questions about that.
She was very lovely and friendly and just a peach. She was a peach.
Yeah. And did you do any stunts? Because I noticed there were a lot of stunts in that film.
I did a lot of stunts.
Did you do your own stunts?
Small stunts. There was one stunt I was not allowed to do that I wanted to do.
Yeah.
Where my character was running and he got clotheslined by somebody.
And you wanted to get
clotheslined. And I wanted to do the, but they wouldn't let me.
That's a shame.
Apparently they had insurance money out on me and but I did a lot of other stuff. Crazy stuff.
It seems like it was a really crazy movie.
It was a crazy, improvisy movie. You know, it felt so good while we were shooting it that I was sure that it was going to be, you know, the next Caddyshack. And then they didn't cut the improvs together.
I feel kind of bad because I kind of picked it out as kind of like a, like maybe a, now I feel kind of bad.
Why?
Because I kind of picked it out as like maybe one of those films that you'd be a little bit embarrassed about. But it seems as though it's actually quite the opposite, that you're actually quite proud of it.
I'm not.
And I wasn't actually trying to embarrass you. I was just trying to actually come up with something that would be kind of like just dumb and funny to talk about. Now I feel like I've been kind of an asshole.
No, you're not. I mean, the film is not. You can't say it's a good movie. It's a mess of a picture. But
you know that. But I looked at some of those comments on there, and you know, some people were really like, "This is a dumb movie, but it's actually pretty funny."
It comes down to, I think, the performances and just everybody involved. It was very spirited. I think the mistake they made in post. Yeah. Production was not cutting together the improvised scenes. They start too close to the script.
I shouldn't have made light about it.
It's okay to make light about it. You know, this is a podcast. This is what people do on podcasts. They make light of things.
But I'm probably
surprised you didn't choose Devil in the Flesh 2 to talk about.
Well, I was kind of, I saw that and, you know, it was like a choice and I could have chosen Devil in the Flesh too, but
because if you want to talk about my favorite paid movie making experience, Devil in the Flesh.
So, okay, then tell me about it, because then I can't. But I don't have like all the. I didn't print.
You don't have
out.
All the comments.
I didn't print anything. I didn't. I didn't do all that research. I only researched Replicate, and now I've done
that's
so much.
That's fine.
Now I've done enough research on Replicate that. Actually, do you put the emphasis on the second syllable or the first syllable? No, it's a three-syllable word. Do you make it replicate?
But yeah, it's sort of when you
or
say
is it replicate. Because then, if
I think it's replicate.
Replicate
when it's the movie. When it's the regular word, it's replicate.
Yeah. No, I mean, I'm talking about the title.
Yeah,
of the
replicate
word.
Yeah, you gotta really hit the Kate. Replicate.
So that's what I was sort of focusing on because I picked one and I figured. That's going to cover at least an hour.
Right.
How long is this supposed to be?
I don't know. It's your show. I think podcasts in general
how long has
are anywhere
the, how long,
from a half
I don't
hour
remember.
To an hour.
I don't remember. How long has the Toncast been in the past that you've listened?
I've listened to some Toncasts.
How long have they been in the past?
They've been the ones that I've heard have been anywhere from 15 minutes to a couple of hours. A
couple of hours.
Yeah, I mean it's
wow. And what were they talking about on those hour long shows?
There was one. There's all kinds of spirituality.
Really, it wasn't making
peace with.
It wasn't jokes.
Well, some of them were jokes. Some that I've heard of are jokey. Others are not.
I was feeling really serious earlier today.
So you wanted to do a serious discussion about Replicate.
But no, actually, I was feeling really serious earlier today, and I was like, I'll just show up and just talk about serious issues.
Why not?
And then at the last minute, I thought, you know, I've really got to, because you're funny, you know, and I've got to really dig deep.
You've got to dig deep to be
to get to match, to really really be able to interview you in a quality way. So I thought I'd talk about Replicate. Replicate.
Well, Replicate is certainly an interesting launching point for a discussion. But, you know, I mean, if you want me to shit on it, I mean,
No, I don't. I feel like now.
I don't.
I feel like I've really blown it.
No, I mean, no, I understand what you were going for.
I don't even know.
You know what the problem is?
You know what the problem is?
What's the problem?
I've been reading a lot of really serious literature lately.
I read a lot of serious literature.
I've been reading
a
lot about the First World War lately. And I just didn't know where the levity was going to come from. And about an hour ago, I realized, hey, this is a way to do this, I guess.
You can do, you could talk Replicate.
Because I just felt like interviewing you about World War One was just going to be so depressing. And people weren't going to want to talk about that. And I don't even know.
Well, people do like to talk about wars quite a bit.
That.
I don't know. My World War One history is not, you know. I've been reading more about the Second World War lately.
I've been wanting to read more about the Second World War.
I'm reading a book called Giddy Giddy Boom Boom.
That's a pretty funny name for a book about the Second World War.
Yeah.
Is that real?
Yeah, it's true. It's the name of a B-52 bomber.
Oh, okay. They named a lot of those.
That was, yeah. That. Well, the pilots, this particular bomber, the pilot, the first lieutenant pilot, normally he's the guy who names the plane, but he told his men, you name the plane, I don't want to name the plane. And they were in, I think, South America, and they were talking to locals, and they had a good luck charm called a Giddy Giddy. So they thought, Giddy Giddy is a good name, and what does a bomber do? It makes things go boom, boom. So Giddy Giddy Boom Boom was the name of the plane.
It's so redolent of Chitty Chitty Bang Bang.
It is.
That it's... Yeah, it's difficult not to giggle a little bit.
Yeah, it's a funny name. In fact, when I've been carrying around to auditions, and when I audition with children who can read, they look at it and say, Giddy Giddy Boom Boom.
Yeah.
And I go, yeah, Giddy Giddy Boom Boom.
Yeah, it's a book about war.
Yeah, it's and specifically, this plane was shot down in Bulgaria, and they were, prisoners of war, and... Mm. You know, interrogated as people are interrogated during wartime. Mm-hmm. But the main reason I'm reading the book is because the first lieutenant pilot of the plane was my grandfather.
Oh my God, really?
Yeah, and on my 40th birthday, my dad, you know, called to say happy birthday and then told me this whole story about how he had just been inspired to research, you know, find out more about his dad during the war, because his dad never really talked about it except, you know, very small bits.
Wow.
And the gunner from the plane, you know, wrote the book. And the reason why he wrote it is because all of his kids and grandkids were asking him about it, and he didn't like talking about it.
Yeah.
So he's like, well, I'll write it down. And then he wrote it down and fell into the hands of a publisher who was published.
Wow, that is...
In 06. Yeah, it's crazy.
That is tremendous. My whole family, none of my direct family, no grandparents, no parents, fought in any of the major wars of the last century, because they were either at the wrong age or they were just lucky.
It was just all luck, or there was no...
In one case, my grandfather was a minister, so he was in theological seminaries.
Oh, okay,
He was in seminary, and they didn't send seminarians they didn't draft them during World War II. And my other grandfather was too old at that point, but too young, or during World War One or something. Nobody fought in Korea, and nobody fought in Vietnam, and it's just very strange.
My other grandfather never fought in any wars either, and it was because he worked at a gunnery.
Mm-hmm.
So they didn't draft people who, were skilled at putting together guns.
I've always wanted to act in a genre picture, like
a war picture.
Yeah,
like War Horse.
Not War Horse.
You don't? Did you see War Horse?
No.
No.
Wasn't gonna go see that movie.
No.
No, it looked pretty fucking stupid.
Really?
Yeah. Did you see it?
No, I'm working on a sort of a spinoff movie.
What's it called? War Pony.
Well, I'm reworking Flowers for Algernon.
Uh huh.
But with a horse instead of a person, so uh-huh. It's a mentally challenged horse who takes a pill and it makes him smarter,
mm-hmm.
and then the pill wears off. And he gets, mentally challenged
again.
Yeah. And it's called Charlie Horse.
Charlie, that's very good. Yeah. That's pretty good.
Yeah,
I kind of set you up.
Yeah, thanks for that.
For that, you're welcome.
Thanks.
I didn't see that movie.
I didn't either.
It is about World War One, and I felt that war deserves more. I didn't mean for that to rhyme, by the way.
That war deserves more. But it's a good rhyme. That would be a good tagline on like
for
a World War One
yeah.
like movie that isn't cheesy, like a hardcore World War One. This war deserves more. Yeah,
there it is. That's good. That's there a good log line or tag line right there.
That's very
the
exciting.
One sheet.
Yeah, you don't. There's World War II is the war that they make movies about, and they generally don't do World War One. And I feel almost like. I mean, I don't know anything about the children's book or the play, but I almost feel like Steven Spielberg wanted to make, another World War II movie, but wanted to separate himself from, so he made it World War One.
The reason they don't do movies about World War One largely is because World War II is a war of movement.
That's true.
There's a lot of movement. There's the troops advance, tanks advance. There's a lot of advancement, whereas World War One is a war of entrenchment, and so there's long periods of utter desolation and boredom.
Yeah.
Followed by, a couple seconds of total horror and everyone dies and then...
Yeah, the action is not right there. Yeah, that's true. It's not cinematic. It's not a cinematic war.
No.
Although I do remember a good Tales from the Dark Side with zombies in the trenches of World War One. Or Tales from the Crypt, rather.
Yeah.
There's a lot of that. Wasn't there a thing... All right, you studying World War One. Was there a thing... In World War One, where on Christmas Day, there was unofficial...
Truces. Yeah.
And I think that might be in War Horse. I think I might have read that.
It's in a lot of films about World War One. It was in Oh, What a Lovely War, which was Attenborough's first film.
Okay.
Shot in 69, I think. But it was one of these myths...
Mm-hmm.
But that did have origins in truth.
Okay.
And where German and British troops on Christmas morning had a momentary truce, kicked around a soccer ball, they traded cigarettes and whatnot, and then jumped back into their trenches and started shooting each other again.
Huh.
But it kept happening. It kept happening all the way up into 1918. And there were official declarations from... the command saying you're not allowed to do that. Like, we have to remind you cannot fraternize.
It seems
the enemy.
It seems almost dangerous. I mean, you're seriously risking getting shot in the face.
You mustn't do that.
Yes,
you mustn't go and have a truce, even though it's all stupid and pointless.
Yeah, in World War II, they had things about not going out and getting syphilis.
Right,
a lot of rules about that.
I
have that rule for myself personally.
I don't want to.
I don't need that to be sanctioned, but legislated.
I don't get syphilis.
You don't at all.
No,
not even like from people with syphilis.
No.
If you're engaged with them.
Oh physically. Well, then I probably do. I was so terrified. Maybe this is true for you, but growing up in the era of AIDS,
AIDS dawn.
I never had sex without a condom. Ever. Not until I was married.
I didn't either.
Because I was petrified.
I didn't either, and I would still get tested all the time.
I never got tested. but I was terrified of. So I never experienced any kind of
when I was
venereal trouble.
Right after I didn't have sexual relations until, you know, relatively
a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, it's just been a couple weeks for me. No, it was in my sophomore year in college.
Yeah, my freshman year in college.
And right after that, I started finally, you know, doing it.
Yeah.
And doing it well. I was definitely not doing it well, but neither were they. No. So it's all fair.
That was just a hat tip to LL. Sorry.
I met LL once.
Did you?
At a bar.
Do you know what LL stands for, by the way?
No, what does it stand for?
Ladies Love.
Ladies Love. That's right. I did know that.
Cool James.
That's one of those many bits of trivia that leave my head as soon as I leave.
There's no reason to hold that around in your head.
I'm really bad at trivia. I don't like playing trivia because I don't maintain. And whenever I hear the answers, it's always, I'm an oh yeah trivia guy.
Oh yeah.
I knew that, and I didn't ultimately care about it. But anyway, so I got a.
So, yeah.
I got after, like, just months after
you got
becoming
disease.
Sexual. No, I got a tumor in my left thigh.
Oh.
And I assumed, because it was so close to my balls, that it was a terrible venereal disease.
And but did you have it removed?
It turned out to be unrelated. Yes, I did.
Are you okay?
Everything's fine.
That was terrifying. I would have been
19
terrified.
Years ago. I was absolutely terrified. And I behaved, and I learned something about myself.
Which was?
I behave very terribly if I think I'm going to die. I was a dick.
No, I know that if that happens, God forbid, I'm not going to be easy to live with at all.
I think next time around I'm going to, like, struggle not to be such a jerk. But I was a serious jerk.
I just think I would fall to pieces, just sort of unravel and be really weak and whiny and...
I think ultimately
unpleasant to be around in that way.
Yeah,
not mean to others.
Now, in a survival situation, you know, where death is imminent, but it's more immediate. It's not a disease.
Yeah.
Then how do you behave? Are you
well? That's
you,
a good question
do
for you.
Huck people in front of
well,
you know.
Well, it depends on how well armed I am.
I see.
Have you ever thought about? I went and got. I went and looked at a shotgun
mm-hmm.
a couple of years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Not for home defense, but you know,
to kill people,
zombie attack. When the shit goes down, zombie apocalypse.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
And I kid about zombies, but like, okay, we've got martial law. I've got to shoot my way out of town.
I see what you're saying.
I'd keep it unassembled at home. I didn't do it. I didn't buy it.
Before we had a child, we had a gun.
A handgun or a shotgun?
It was a handgun. It was a .45. But once we had the kid, we were
I kind of like how you said that.
Yeah.
Your head lowered a little bit. For those of you listening at home.
Yes.
Todd's head lowered a little bit.
And yeah.
And he kind of nodded like, yeah.
Yeah.
It was a .45.
Yeah, it was a .45. But the truth of the matter is I, despite the fact that I had that in my home for a number of years, I have never actually shot a gun.
You didn't even shoot the gun you owned.
It wasn't mine. It was hers. It's the wife's.
Did she shoot the gun that she owned?
Yes.
Had she shot it?
Yes. She's apparently a good shot, from what I'm told.
I have shot guns. I've shot quite a number of them, but... I don't own one, but I'm
the only one in my family. Maybe my sister hasn't, but I mean, you know, like I said, my grandfather used to work in a gunnery, so there was no shortage of guns.
Have you ever shot a gun for a part?
No, but I've been shot a couple of times. But a
couple of times,
yeah.
Squibbed.
I've been squibbed. Yeah.
I've been squibbed once.
Yeah. I've been shot at. Even that Fuzz Track City movie.
Yeah.
Where I play a private detective.
Yeah.
Everybody, all the characters have guns.
Except
me. My character did not use a gun.
Was it a character thing?
Mm-hmm.
Huh. That's very interesting.
He's just all about the detective work. It's not about the violence.
Maybe they know. Maybe that's something you carry with you when you come into the room.
A gun?
No. That you don't carry guns. You're a peaceful man.
Yeah, maybe.
And maybe people are like, no, he's not the guy to carry the gun. He's the guy that we have not carry the gun.
That seems to be... Well, it's like I'm kind of interesting. I'm Hanksy, you know? Hanksy wasn't a big gun guy when he first started out. It wasn't
except
until...
Except for Turner and Hooch.
Yeah, that's true. But that one didn't do well.
No, I mean, he really doesn't carry a gun.
They blame the fact that the dog dies at the end. Spoiler alert, dog dies at the end of Turner Hooch, but it was because he was carrying a gun. And people don't like Hanks with a gun unless his hand is shaking violently.
Yeah. Yeah, because he's too nice to do that.
He's too nice.
He's too genial and friendly.
Yeah, you don't want to.
Did he carry a gun in the Spielberg one?
Saving Private Ryan, the war movie.
Yeah, he carried a gun in that.
Yeah, well, yeah, yeah.
And then Catch Me If You Can, he carried a gun too, didn't he?
Did he ever even brandish it?
No, and he didn't really brandish it much in Saving Private Ryan.
No, he just.
That's okay because in Saving Private Ryan, he's a noble. He's like a noble gun carrier.
Yeah, that's true. But there's no, you know.
Not to say that our law enforcement officials aren't noble.
That's true.
Have we done enough?
That's up to you. It's your show.
Oh, Christ, don't put this in my lap.
It is my show, though.
It's so true.
If you've gotten what you want out of your show, I feel like, you know, this is your show is kind of, you know, you seem nonplussed about the whole having your own show.
I just feel underprepared
for your own show.
And Yeah.
Well, I found this interview very engaging. I feel like we've had some nice conversations.
I read a mean comment. That was not right.
I actually did not know about that comment, and I love it. I think it's great. I think it's marvelous.
Do you?
I have my own podcast named after the stage show I used to have called The Film Pigs,
and right.
And you know, it's no hold bar opinions about
films,
cinema, and films. And I would say that ours are a little bit more thoughtful than that.
But I still think I missed.
You feel bad about
it. I feel bad about it.
But yeah. Sadly, though, I mean, you can research me as your guest, and there's not a lot. If you're going to take the interviewing Todd as an actor route.
Yeah, I just didn't know what else to do, Todd. Top five movies? And then we'll go.
Top five movies of all time?
Yeah, come on. Can you do it? I'm sure you've thought about it. Desert Island movies.
The Desert Island movies.
Yeah, come on.
Yeah, but there's like... Okay. I'll just off the top of my head...
Irrespective of a genre, you just have to just do it.
That I'd really... Okay.
You'd feel so sad if
I'm trying to think... Okay, here are the movies that I...
Go.
But this... See, this is... These movies do not make me look immensely intelligent, but
I'll... That's baloney.
All right. I'm not immensely intelligent, but I call bullshit. I feel like a lot of people who try to make their top five lists always have Citizen Kane in there.
I don't have Citizen Kane. I like Citizen Kane,
all right, but it's not.
I don't have Citizen Kane in there. I don't want to watch that movie over and over again.
All right. John Carpenter's The Thing.
Tremendous film.
Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Tremendous film. Both of them. A barrel of laughs and loads of fun.
Yeah, exactly.
What movie making should be. Truthfully, I'm not being sarcastic. It's difficult to tell.
I agree with you.
Both of them are just magnificent films.
Yeah, if you want to know about movie magic, which Hugo, the Martin Scorsese's film, preached to us about, you should watch those two movies.
Those two films.
And that's actual movie magic as opposed to being told about it.
Absolutely.
I would say... God, I mean, I feel like I'd have to say Caddyshack. I don't know if I could go for a year without watching Caddyshack.
Mm-hmm.
George Romero's original Dawn of the Dead, the sequel to Night of the Living Dead.
Yep.
Dawn of the Dead, that would be that. And God. Shoot. Can I say six? Or do I have to keep...
You can say six. You can say ten.
I would say Spinal Tap.
Uh-huh.
I would want to take that to a desert island.
Uh-huh.
I would say there's a little movie called The Music of Chance.
Okay. I don't know it, but that doesn't mean anything.
Most people don't. It's only available on VHS, and that is out of print. Mm-hmm. But it's got James Spader and Mandy Patinkin and a bunch of people. It's a very good movie. I mean, geez, like Princess Bride.
Mm.
Like basically Rob Reiner's first six films.
Yeah.
Any of those, yeah. I would like. Harry and Sally is such a good movie.
That's a fantastic film.
The Sure Thing is such a good movie, you know. And then, you know, golly, I want to take Animal House. I love Animal House.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you know what? Mary Poppins.
Yep.
Mary Poppins.
Yep.
I love that movie.
Yep. Just showed that to the kids.
Did they like it?
Loved it.
It's hard not to love. I did. I showed it to my, I guess she's my niece, and she, when she was, I don't know, maybe 7 or 8,
mm-hmm.
and she really liked it. But the my favorite part is the chimney sweep dance sequence, which is intensely long. It's an intensely long number. At the end of the number, I was like, well, what'd you think? She's like, yeah, I liked it. Very long. And I was like, that's a fair criticism.
Yeah. It is. It has some long stretches, but...
yeah.
We saw The Sound of Music recently and talk about a long film. That one.
Yeah.
That one stretches. And I had this memory, too. Growing up, and my family sitting down to watch My Fair Lady,
mm-hmm.
and
that was on the VHS that came in two.
And after
VHS
a while, things. Sitting in my room, exasperated because, and I was just like, "What? Isn't this fucking over yet? Like, I don't want to watch this movie."
It's yeah,
and it's not, and it's like an 8 hours long. Like, seriously, what is like? How much more story could they possibly
have
milk out of this?
Do you? Now that you're older, do you enjoy it?
I haven't seen my
because that's what's happened to me with certain movies. I mean, like when I saw 2001: A Space Odyssey when I was a kid, I was like,
come on.
Where's the lightsaber duels? What is happening? How long are we going to watch this guy jog in a
circle? Depends
on
the film. It depends on the film.
But now I watch it.
I didn't find Sound of Music to be too long. I was just acutely aware of its length because I was watching it with the kids.
Yeah. Well, I'm not a huge musical guy, but
me neither.
Yeah, but yeah,
but that's. You know. Well, Todd Anderson, thanks so much for...
Thanks for having me on your show.
Being here for my show.
I think you're being real hard on yourself.
That would be nothing new. That's me in a nutshell right there.
You're hard on yourself?
Yeah. Thanks, though, for coming in and doing the podcast.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolutely.
And pointing out the Replicate. Comment from Replicate. I'll sleep well tonight. Knowing that Neil in the UK,
I think you should. Shit. I just think you should look for him. Play us out. Play us out, Johnny. Here's the music. Just play for, don't you have? Do you have music that comes up now?
Yeah. There's. I'm sure there's music at the end of your show.
Yeah. There's music for this.
Yeah. I'm sure there's.
So music. I was looking around to my my band here.
You know, it dawns on me. I kept talking about VHS tapes, and you probably have your audience skews pretty young. They probably have no idea what I was talking about.
No, I think they know what you're talking about.
Oh, okay,
yeah,
good.
VHS then, tapes. I think. I mean, you know, they're not that up. They're not that long obsolete.
All right.
You can still buy them.
All right.
At yard sales
and whatnot.
Farmers markets.
All right. I can't wait to hear your end theme song.
Yeah, it's really good. Please, fish top. Please. Please make it stop.